Welcome to the Resonate Leadership Podcast. I'm Aideen Hickey, and I'm here again with my partner for this series, Dr. Jeff Pelham. And this is the fourth podcast in the Art of Fearless Conversation series. And we're moving the conversation now from talking about what psychological safety is and how it enables fearless conversations to the question of how to cultivate psychological safety, particularly within a team setting. And we know the psychological safety from the previous podcasts and from the research that's been done. It's a core foundation of high-performing teams. It leads to greater innovation, well-being, team learning, and overall team performance. But knowing that it does all that is one thing, but actually how to go about then cultivating it is a whole other ballgame, Jeff. And I'm looking forward to this conversation today.
Thanks, Aideen. I'm delighted to be here. And so where should we start? It feels like it's a big topic.
It is, Jeff. And I think we've, you know, there's frameworks out there and there's, you know, lots of research has been done to try and work out how to do this. And we've had lots of conversations about grappling with all that, you know, data plus grappling with experience to figure out, well, actually, how do we go about doing this? And it struck me that like the very first step really is that the leader of a team, the leader of an organization, that they make a decision that this is something that's worthwhile investing in, that there's somehow a realization that psychological safety is an enabler of team performance. It's a foundation of team performance. And therefore, this is something that's important to work on. And I think that's a really key point, Jeff. And it brings me back to thinking about Doc Rivers, that story, I think it was in podcast 2, when he made that decision, he needed to do something around the culture of the team for it to be a high-performing team. And that moment seemed to be quite pivotal.
It's, you know, referencing back to our notion of authority. It's where the person uses their good authority, if you like, to make the decision. And to it takes me back to my example of the first workshop, where the CEO shifted from just effing do it to I really need to do something different and bring my organization on. It's sort of like a shift in mindset to see the world differently and realize the job's different to how he first imagined it to be.
The piece that I'd like us to talk a bit about today, Jeff, is understanding the current teamwork experience. So what's going on right now? And I think that's the piece that I'd love to start to get under the hood of.
Well, why don't you say some more about that? You've had quite a bit of experience, really, of if you like, with teams getting under the hood, starting that process by which they start to engage with this process of psychological safety.
So if I step back from it for a minute, and if we cultivate the different practices, which we're going to talk about the next day, that's fantastic. But if we don't know where we're starting from, we might not be addressing the fundamental questions that reside in a team. Back in the day when I worked in GE, I was, you know, many of us underwent, you know, Six Sigma black belt training and all that. And it was all about understanding the core, the nub of the challenge or the issue you're facing, and then addressing that rather than trying to put sticky plasters or fixing things that you don't really fully understand. So I do really like to start with understanding what the current experience is on the team. And that can be done in a couple of ways. And the first can simply be through conversation, Jeff, through the leader of the team or a coach or whatever way the organization wants to work it. Simply having conversations with people on the team and asking them, you know, what's their experience on the team? How do they feel about being on this team? What gets in the way of them being able to bring their best to the team? Are there times when they hold themselves back? You know, in the previous conversations that we've had, we've talked about people not speaking up and the dangers of people not speaking up. So are there moments when you find you've got something important to say and you don't speak up, and what's going on? So starting that conversation can be really interesting to gather some data about how the felt experience on that on the team. So that's one place certainly that we could start, is through those conversations, Jeff. Having those conversations one-to-one, I think, is really important. Because if you have it in a team setting, whatever dynamics are going on are going to manifest in that conversation as well. So if people feel like they can't have a voice, they won't have a voice in that conversation either. So having those conversations one-to-one is really important. If you go down that road, and then there's an alternative route, Jeff, which is to use a tool. And the tool, guys, that I'm familiar with is the Fearless Organization Scan, which is a tool where you can actually ask a set of questions, which we'll talk about a bit more in a moment. And people will answer those questions. And so you gather a data set basically for the team with an understanding of what the experience is of that team. And that's in a more anonymous way, and people can feel freer maybe to answer those questions.
Yes. What are those questions?
So what this tool does is it leverages work from Professor Amy Edmondson. So it's a highly validated tool. You know, back when she started doing her research, and I'll talk about the specific seven questions in a minute, Jeff, she developed this list. And it literally takes 3 minutes for people to answer. So it's so, so straightforward. And I'll take you through those seven questions now, and we can talk a little bit more maybe about the process afterwards. But from the point of view of any like listeners to this podcast, maybe it would be helpful if you think about a team you're a part of. And for some people, they might be members of multiple teams. And so think about one specific team that you're a part of. And I'll ask each of these questions, and you might step into that zone of, how do I experience this from the point of view of my team? Does that sound okay, Jeff?
That sounds good, actually. I'll try to do the same for myself.
Yeah, great, great. So the first question is, for the team that you've chosen, is it safe to take a risk on this team? If you make a mistake on your team, is it held against you? Do people on the team sometimes reject others for being different? Are you able to bring up problems and tough issues? Are your unique skills and talents valued and utilized? Is it difficult to ask other team members for help? And do people on the team deliberately act to undermine your efforts? So those are the seven questions, Jeff. So if we picture a team, this is sent out to them. People are individually sitting at their computers, and they take about 3 minutes to answer those questions, and they're not yes, no answers. There's a degree of, you know, the range of options as they answer those questions. And then behind the scene on this tool, that data is aggregated. And we get a report that's presented in a really nice way that provides data on which a conversation can be anchored.
Interestingly, I was listening, and the one that stood out for me was about people being different on the team. I think there was a question there about, and of course that refers back to, in some ways, to the whole diversity and inclusion that we spoke about. But it reminded me of the teams I've been on, where we do things in a certain way, and we're quite almost a bit precious about that. And if somebody comes in and starts saying, well, you could do this differently, it's, you know, like a sharp intake of breath. And it's almost like, oh, they're not really one of us, really. Something like that. So it's, and I've known it as a number of times, actually, when the outside voice comes in and it's really hard to let it in. Realizing that was a real weakness, you know, because in a way you get into your own little bubble of this is the way we do it, and the world outside's moved on.
Yeah, And it's funny, with each of these questions, you could kind of nearly tie it back to examples we've talked about, Jeff, through the podcast. So you've got that example for that question. And the question, are you able to bring up problems and tough issues? We can think about Volkswagen and what happened there, because when there was, you know, a requirement for them to create a product of a particular standard, people couldn't come back and go, actually, this is not possible. Yeah. We can't do this with the current technology. Yeah. Instead of that, they went around and chose a different route, a very unfortunate route to do it, but they weren't able to bring up the problems or tough issues. So when there are issues with these particular questions, like, they have real consequences. Same with the Tenerife Air disaster, not being able to bring up the concern, the question, the concern about, are we cleared for takeoff? Should we really be doing this? So each of those questions can be really, really interesting. But there can be very different things underlying them, Jeff, which is what I find really interesting. So if we take the question, do people on the team deliberately act to undermine your efforts? That will mean different things to different people and on different teams. So in some cases, that can mean actually people believing that somebody is actually genuinely trying to undermine them, as the question states. But in other cases, it can be that through somebody's actions, they are inadvertently undermining somebody, but not with any desired intent. Mm-hmm. And that can actually come out in a conversation and you go, wow. And it can be actually quite a shock to somebody to realize, actually, somebody on the team felt that I undermined them, and I had absolutely no idea that that was a consequence of my action. So some of this stuff is really, really fixable when issues emerge.
So when you've got the data, what do you do with it?
Yeah. And this is what it's all about, Jeff. It's the dialogue. And this is the exciting piece. So, you know, the tool is just a tool. That's what it does. It takes the data. It does present the data in a really nice way, which enables the conversation. But the exciting piece is starting the conversation with the team. So what I would do with it is, you know, if effectively you can take 2 to 3 hours to talk about the answer to those questions. It sounds crazy because it's just 7 simple questions. But it's all about the felt experience that people have in a team. It's important to them. People spend so much time at work, you know, like 5 days a week, however many hours a day, that this experience for them is important to them. So when you get in the room and you actually show them visually the data and they can see under different headings how it's working out, you can actually identify what are the areas that we need to zone in on. So the tool itself presents the data as an overall level and not just, you know, a score on a door, but actually a span, a kind of range of scores. So you can see, well, there's some people who find this really psychologically safe, but actually there's the other experience as well. So when you see that range, you know, there's a variety of experiences on this team. And then it delves beneath that under some different headings. And the headings are the attitude to risk and failure on this team, inclusion and diversity, the ability to have open conversations, and the willingness of people to help on the team. And under those 4 headings, there's a further breakdown of data. And I guess the starting point for a conversation with the team really is for us to establish a way of working. So to establish a space where it feels psychologically safe to be having this difficult conversation about people's experience on the team. So we spend a bit of time going, how do we want to be in the room today? What would be helpful in terms of having these conversations? We want people to be able to share their examples and their real life experiences. So how can we create that safe environment for those difficult conversations? And after we do that, I share the data. And then time and space is given to the team to work in subgroups or as a bigger group, depending on the size of the team, to actually say, these are the areas that we think are important to zone in on. And then the dialogue starts from there to unpack what this data actually means, because the scores are just scores, but it'll mean different things in different teams. So through coaching and conversation, we unpack what actually is going on beneath the surface. And then we move on to the next piece of the conversation, which is, so what do we want to do about it? And the team will leave the room that day with some clear ideas as to what they want to do differently in order to address some of the challenges that might have come up through the conversation.
Sounds fascinating. I just wonder, just going backtracking a bit, I guess bringing this, if I call it crudely, this tool, in saying we're looking to use this. Is there any preparatory conversations or, you know, how do you get a team ready to even engage with this without thinking, well, I'm not going to speak up here?
Yeah, so before we even start, I mean, there's work with the leader of the team to actually understand where they're at. Is there an appetite for this? We talked at the beginning about making a decision. This is something we want to invest in. That has to be there. And then, you know, there's conversations around the mindsets that would be really important to underpin psychological safety. So let's talk about that. We want the leader of the team to role model that in the conversation. So it's important for me to help them, guide them through that conversation, so that they really want to listen to the people around the table when we're having the conversation about the data. From the team point of view, I also have a video that I share I'd share potentially a video of Amy Edmondson speaking about psychological safety, but also I have a video that I've prepared myself, which gives them an overview of what psychological safety is, as well as what this process is going to look like, so that people feel the safety of knowing what's the start, middle and end in terms of where we're going through on this. And rather than taking time in the room with the team to share theories or research, which is all very valuable, I send that out beforehand so people can get their heads around it. So the time that the team then spends together is actually time spent on dialogue around the experience on that team when everybody's together, and on their feelings, their experience of psychological safety, rather than an abstract concept of psychological safety.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And just so jumping back to I just wonder if you've got any anecdotes or whatever about, well, what's it actually been like? What's it been like for you as a facilitator of these conversations? Have they been easy? Have they been tricky? Are there circumstances where you wouldn't even think we're not going to do this?
Well, I guess the words that come to my mind are, you know, fulfilling and exciting, because as a coach with a team of people having these conversations, you actually don't know where the conversation is going to go. But you know that you're talking about something that's important to the members of the team, and it's something that's going to be important for team performance to improve this. And as we've talked about in previous podcasts, this isn't binary. It's psychologically safe or it's not safe. It's just, it's all a question of degrees. And it's about moving that needle in whatever way we can to create a more psychologically safe environment. So I feel like it's valuable work, therefore it's fulfilling. And it's also edge of seat work, because you just don't quite know where that conversation is going to go. And as a coach, the thing that's most important for me, or the job that's most important for me, is creating the safe container to have the conversations so people feel like they can speak up. So if I have one job on that day, aside from sharing the data, it's the most important job is creating that space where people feel like they can have those conversations. And you said, are there times when you wouldn't go near this with a team? And I guess there's probably a couple of things that come to mind on that. One is, you obviously need the leader to want to do this. And if they don't, you know, this isn't going to work, if I'm honest. You really need to have the will behind it for it to go someplace. But the second thing is, and I haven't come across this, Jeff, but I can imagine it could happen, is if there are tricky interpersonal difficulties between a couple of people on the team, and I don't mean just your average day-to-day tricky, but like really, really tricky dynamics happening between a couple of people on the team, it may be better for that to be dealt with beforehand rather than that then surfacing and hijacking the team conversation around psychological safety. So I guess I would take every situation case by case to understand what the best approach might be. There could be other circumstances where there's a context in terms of restructuring that could actually throw things. So I think, you know, as I said, I think case by case, every situation, we would take it and figure out, well, actually, what's the best way of developing psychological safety in this case? Is it through a tool like this? Is it through having open conversations with members of the team? Is it through the leader of the team simply starting by role modeling some of these behaviors. And it could be a one-to-one coaching engagement with the leader of the team to start with the role modeling of it, and then that rippling down. So that could equally be a way of going about this. There's no, you know, one way of doing this, Jeff.
Yeah. I know one thing that's important to you, if I might say this, is that not to just view this this tool just as a tool. You know, it's embedded, isn't it, in a whole preparation and the way you then kind of debrief and work through it. It's you know, because it's so easy to just think, oh, there's a tool here, let's use it. But there's more to it, isn't there?
Yeah, so I feel a responsibility as a coach when I'm gathering this data. If somebody is having an experience in a team and they decide to share it through this tool, and it's, you know, it may be shared anonymously, that's data that I care about. That's somebody's personal experience 5 days a week turning up to work. So I care about that data and their experience. Mm-hmm. So I guess I feel a professional responsibility to handle it with care and help the team navigate that process, Jeff. So yeah, gathering the data is just one small part of it. It's what you do with it is what's really, really key. Will I give some examples of the kind of things that crop up, Jeff, maybe in some of these conversations? Would that be helpful?
Yeah.
So it's one that's a regular feature is, and it comes back to one of the questions, Jeff, about, you know, mistakes being held against me, is in some environments, it's kind of success or failure is kind of the binary frame of thinking. And so the developmental mindset might not be there. And so one that crops up regularly is where people feel like they're punished for mistakes. And if they're punished for mistakes, the consequence of that is obviously that they're not going to, or they might be more likely to hide when a mistake has taken place. And they might be less likely to help as well. So that's a crucial one that sometimes comes out, and a very common one that comes out through these conversations. And it's a dangerous one because, you know, it could, like the VW one comes to my mind again, where people might hide things, and you certainly don't want that to happen. And depending on the industry we're talking about, it'll have varying levels of consequences. Other ones, Jeff, and I don't know if you recall us talking about Kim Scott's model of radical candor, where we want to balance candor with care in conversation, that oftentimes that model can be really helpful because we find that maybe people are being very candid without sufficient care for people, or that people actually care so much about the people that they don't have direct conversations, and that inadvertently serves to undermine people.
And I'm guessing you've been present with during a number of these conversations, these debriefs. What's it been like? What's the feel of it sometimes? And where does it, you know, as you come to the close in this, what's your sense of what's happened in the room?
There's always this sense of there's not enough time, because it starts this conversation that just gets that conversation going. And I know on multiple occasions, as people go out the door, they're still chattering about it. They go for lunch maybe afterwards, they're still chattering about it. And I'm told afterwards that it simply started the conversation. And if that conversation continues. And in an ideal world, if you are using this scan, it would be helpful if 4 or 6 months down the line, it's done again. We don't have to have the same extent of a debrief on it, but just to see, has that dial shifted? So it's not just a once-off thing, because that's one of the big things about psychological safety, Jeff, is that it's not once-off. It's not like one and done, we're now fixed, we move on. Psychological safety is a function of day-to-day behavior that we need to be aware of. And it's funny, we talk about mindsets, Jeff. I actually, next to my desk, have a piece of paper, and on it I've written down a couple of these mindsets to remind myself when I go into conversations to go in with curiosity and humility. Those are the words actually sitting on a piece of paper next to my desk. And this is an ongoing thing that needs to be worked on. It doesn't end. And so the overall feeling is maybe there's a little bit of trepidation because you don't know where the conversation is going to go. But there's also excitement that we're working on something that matters and that relates to the experience people have day to day at work. And then this feeling of this is just the starting point. Yeah, that's probably what comes up for me.
I have a third word I'd like to add to those two, which is compassion.
Yeah. And, yeah, no, I like that. I really like that. Yeah.
You may have already said this, but do they go away with some, I don't know what, goals, tasks, you know, something they're going to work on?
Yeah. So at the beginning of the session, we work on these ways of working, how we're going to be in the room. And at the end, they take away some actions and they've decided on those actions themselves, not me.
Yeah.
And oftentimes what happens is people say, okay, well, maybe we should go back to these ways of working and actually update them with some of these behaviors we want to shift. And then they walk away with actually, it's almost like a team charter. This is how we want to be around each other.
Mm.
This is the kind of the boundaries. This is how we want to work together.
Mm.
So it's something concrete they can actually take away and work on. And it's something I haven't mentioned so far, because we've talked about the role of the leader in terms of working in psychological safety, but the team co-creates that environment. So it's really important that the leader of the team doesn't walk out feeling like it's all on their shoulders.
Yeah.
It is on the team to follow, to live these ways of working and how they're engaging with each other. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is team responsibility. This isn't down to the leader. And they, of course, have a key role in it, but it's not all down to them.
Absolutely. It has to be a team effort.
It definitely does, Jeff. It does. So I think it's time for us to start drawing this conversation to a close here today, Jeff.
Yep. I've enjoyed talking about how we understand this current experience of team in terms of psychological safety. So where to next then, Aideen?
Well, I remember in the first podcast, you talked about a set of very learnable practices to cultivate psychological safety. So that's the territory we're going to cover in the next and last sessions. Very hard to believe that we're coming to an end, really.
Yes, I guess it's time to draw the strands together. I guess I'm going to be doing that by remembering some of those stories we've been telling.
Fantastic. So thanks for the conversation today, Jeff, and looking forward to the next and final one.